Afternoon, Council.
Afternoon.
Ready to proceed?
Good afternoon, Justices. My name is Jack Phillips. I'm here on behalf of Volkswagen of America, Inc., defendant below, appellant herein. There are two, but only two, issues on appeal here today. The first is whether Volkswagen should have been granted a judgment NOV as far as the creation of a hazardous condition. The second is whether, in the alternative, it is now entitled to a new trial based on the plain error contained in the trial court's jury instructions or as a result of the manifest injustice rendered by the jury's verdict. In the lower court, the defendant, Volkswagen, presented a motion for summary judgment. The trial court divided that motion into three segments. The first segment was active control, the second was possessory control, the third was somewhat of a surprise, an alleged hazardous condition. The court clearly ruled and granted summary judgment on active control. Plaintiff does not contest that. As to possessory control, when the court began its oral ruling, it misspoke. The court began by saying that it was going to deny Volkswagen's motion with respect to possessory control, but then immediately followed that comment by stating, "I just don't find sufficient genuine issues of material fact on that." There'd be no reason to make such a statement if, in fact, you weren't intending to grant summary judgment. Lest there be any mistake whatsoever on that point, however, the court went on to state its conclusion or its ruling as to the hazardous condition issue. When speaking on the hazardous condition issue, the trial court stated, quote, "So on that issue and that issue only, I am going to permit the case to proceed to trial. But it is going to be on that very narrow issue because I don't feel comfortable as the judge at this stage finding as a matter of law there is no liability on that particular aspect." This seems to Volkswagen to remove any doubt that the trial court granted summary judgment as to possessory control. Trial counsel, just to make sure, however, asked the court, the question was, "Just to be clear on the record, the active control and possessory control issue, you are granting our motion for summary judgment." The court's answer, correct. That is further reflected in the trial court's docket. The docket entry regarding defendant's motion for summary judgment reads as follows: granted as to active control, granted as to possessory control, denied as to whether Volkswagen created a hazardous condition.
Well, regardless of that, under the agreements with the other side, wasn't there two kinds of maintenance, major maintenance and day-to-day maintenance? And under the major maintenance, that would involve the design and installation of the flooring in the area where you fell?
That's correct, Justice. But the fact is that once the major maintenance may have finished, whatever that may have been, possessory control was turned back over to the tenant. And in fact, we could have insisted that the tenant do the major maintenance and we would simply be required to reimburse the tenant. But the fact that major maintenance may have been done at some point in time doesn't mean that we forever then retain possessory control.
Doesn't the major maintenance issue relate to whether or not Volkswagen created a hazardous condition rather than whether they were a owner in possession?
That's our point, Your Honor. Justice Steele, the point being that if you find that this floor may have been hazardous, that doesn't mean we're still in possessory control. We installed the floor, and there's no doubt about that. We then turned that premises back over to the tenant, and the tenant was in charge of maintenance. End of story.
Is it fair to read that that's what the trial judge was saying when she granted summary judgment on two issues but not on the third, that she was concerned that Volkswagen, having installed the floor, had created a hazardous condition, though they were no longer an owner in possessory control?
We believe that that's the proper and fair reading of the record. We also assert, Your Honor, that the plaintiff conceded that point in the lower court. In the lower court, just to make certain that no evidence as to possessory control was admitted, Volkswagen's filed a motion in limine as to possessory control evidence. The plaintiff's counsel agreed in chambers that he would not argue possessory control, and that is again reflected in the docket where it says plaintiff will not argue possessory control.
Let me stop because I'm getting very confused.
All right.
Very quickly. I thought this case, by the time it got to trial, was only about whether the resurfacing that had been done by Volkswagen, that created a shiny epoxy-like surface that was apparently fine when dry but very slippery when wet, at least arguably. Whether that was the creation of a hazardous condition for which Volkswagen was liable when the party who was injured slipped on the wet floor.
Well, that's our reading of the record also, Your Honor. The problem being that on this appeal, plaintiff's counsel is now taking a contrary position. In the lower court, plaintiff's counsel, you know, in a post-trial briefing, we asserted time and again that possessory control had been awarded in our favor, judgment had been awarded in our favor, and plaintiff's counsel didn't contest that and, in fact, agreed that summary judgment had been granted as to active control and possessory control, well, leaving only the issue of that hazardous condition of which you speak, Justice Berger.
And didn't the jury find that it was a hazardous condition?
The jury rendered a verdict in favor of plaintiff, but the jury wasn't properly instructed.
Well, let's take Justice Berger's very succinct and precise statement of what the issue was that was to go to the jury, and
right.
Assume for the sake of my question that that is absolutely accurate.
Okay.
What then was wrong with the instructions that the jury received that were inconsistent with the duty they were to perform, if anything?
Oh, there are at least three major deficiencies that constitute plain error. The first, Your Honor, is that the jury was charged on the wrong body of the law. The jury was charged as if Volkswagen was in possessory control of this premises. The jury was told that Volkswagen had a duty to third persons to keep the premises reasonably safe and to inspect for defects. That's not the law with regard to non-possessory, non-maintenance landowners or landlords. But that's how the jury was instructed. And that is fundamentally incorrect. It is not applying the specific facts of this particular case to this case, nor is it an accurate statement of the law. That's number one.
Okay, well, let's stop with number one for a moment.
Fine.
Let's assume you're right. Let's assume that instruction shouldn't have been given.
Okay.
What difference does it make? Why isn't that harmless error? Because the issue that the jury did decide was whether there was a hazardous condition that Volkswagen was responsible for and that caused the injury.
All right. That will back me up to one of my earlier arguments, and that is that there is no such thing as a hazardous condition exception under Delaware law. The general Delaware law is that a non-possessory landlord who has no maintenance obligations has no obligation to the tenant or the tenant's invitees. That's the law. That's Craig versus AAR Realty.
Wait a second. If that's your position, then you should never have gone to trial, right?
Well, that's our position. Right? We assert that we should have been granted summary judgment 100%. We were not, because, as I say, as somewhat a surprise, this judge created an exception to the general rule that we say doesn't exist.
Okay, but see, we were talking about jury instructions. We weren't talking about what the law is on the hazardous condition exception.
Right.
So in terms of, you were complaining about the jury instruction, and I was asking you, does it matter if the only thing the jury was going to decide was whether there was a hazardous condition, and whether that was the cause of this injury? Then who cares whether they were also told that Volkswagen had some other obligations?
Well, with all due respect, Justice Berger, I don't see how you can tell the jury that Volkswagen had an obligation to keep the premises reasonably safe and to inspect for defects when, in fact, they don't have that obligation. Obviously, that's very prejudicial. And number two, I mean, the next severe problem or plain error with the jury instruction is they were never instructed on the proper body of law, that is, that a non-possessory landlord without maintenance obligations has no obligations. Number three,
you've assumed, haven't you, that, and for purposes of all of these arguments, that your client is a non-possessory landlord. Now, don't all the documents show that your client was basically a lessee who granted a license, and therefore there was joint possession of the premises with the licensee?
I agree that my client was a lessee who granted a license. I do not agree that there was joint possession, Justice Ridgely.
Isn't that what distinguishes a license from a lease?
Well, I guess if you consider the entire area that we're talking about down there, it's a huge area. So I suppose that you could call the license a sublease of a specific portion. But there's no doubt in the record that...
Well, a license isn't a sublease, is it?
Well, Your Honor, there there is a case that I think is pretty much on point, the Kovach versus Brandywine Innkeepers case, which dealt with the Radisson Hotel that had licensed its building to a management company, and it was running the management company was running the building at the time this plaintiff suffered an injury in the building, and the court held that the licensor or lessor, as and it referred to it as both, had licensed or leased this building to the licensee lessee, and the licensee lessee management company was the one that was responsible.
Unless I'm mistaken, there's no cross appeal. Is there asking us to readdress the Superior Court's finding on summary judgment that Volkswagen was not an owner in possessory control?
That is correct, Your Honor. That is another one of my arguments that we jumped to the jury instructions on, but that there's absolutely clear that in the lower case, the plaintiff in his responsive papers on the judgment NOV conceded that summary judgment was granted as to possessory control. The plaintiff did not take a cross appeal. I say that is on any of these issues, I think it is, number one, improper for the plaintiff to try to do a 180-degree turnabout here. Number two, it's spent its entire answering brief arguing a position that's not on appeal. The possessory control issue has been decided. It is on the record as a decision of the lower court. It has not been appealed from. The only thing appealed from is the JNOV and the jury instructions.
Well, the propriety of the jury instructions are evaluated by the evidence presented at trial, aren't they?
They are, but the jury instructions failure is that they never recognized that we were a non-possessory landowner or landlord.
Were these an agreed set of instructions?
No, Your Honor. They were contested. They were, unfortunately, it was off the record because the court didn't have a court reporter in the chambers, but we objected on the record when we had an opportunity to the instruction that was given. Admittedly, it wasn't a very artful objection, but nevertheless, if you assume that we were a non-possessory landlord, because that is the ruling of the lower court, if you start that is the law in this case, which we assert that it is, the instructions are plainly erroneous, plainly.
But the facts presented to the jury were that your client was a sub or a lessee that licensed to the other side. Is that right?
Yes, Your Honor. But it was never explained to the jury exactly what the duties were, and in fact, our remaining duties were. And in fact, what was contained in the jury instructions were erroneous. They said our duty was to maintain the premises in a safe condition and inspect for defects. Obviously, if somebody's slipping in a puddle of water, you could say that that's not proper maintenance and it's a defect. But that wasn't our responsibility. The trial evidence is absolutely clear, and again, is not contested, and in fact was conceded that Transworld had the obligation to maintain this building. That's replete throughout the record here on appeal and in the lower court, and not contested by plaintiff. As a matter of fact, on page A, bear with me 1 second, the plaintiff's counsel concedes that on Exhibit A, page 144, and then in our opening brief at pages 6 and 7, we cite all the record evidence that was conceded throughout the trial, throughout the deposition testimony.
Well, does the jury's verdict, basically apportioning negligence 70%, 30%, was that correct?
Yes, sir.
Does the jury's verdict essentially say that if TW had done everything that they could have done to maintain the floor, given the circumstances under which it was designed and under which it would be used, that it was still defective?
No, I don't believe so, Your Honor, because the plaintiff's own expert testified that if properly maintained, even when wet, it would be safe. Now, that might be debatable, but that was the plaintiff's expert's testimony, and it doesn't redound to us. I mean,
when you say it's debatable, don't we have to view that favoring the other side and view the jury's verdict?
It depends on whether or not you accept the plaintiff's expert's testimony as we set it forth. We say that the plaintiff expert conceded that the floor was safe when wet if properly maintained, further conceded that drying the floor is the maintenance procedure, further conceded that Transworld had the maintenance obligation.
The evidence, I thought, as in terms of the surface on which the injured party slipped, was that dry, it met all reasonable standards. Wet, it did not, and that under the circumstance, it was almost impossible for anyone maintaining it to keep it dry at all times.
Well, I don't know about the latter portion. The first part of your statement is correct. TW did take remedial measures as far as putting down mats and putting down non-skid paint where it saw fit to do so. Nobody prevented it from doing it in other places. It was their obligation to take care of it in any manner they saw fit. They chose not to do it. We assert that it was TW's negligence that caused this accident, not ours. We turned over this premises, and that was it.
Mr. Phillips, did you want to reserve
your
time?
I did, Your Honor. I was reserving 5 minutes, so I'll stop now unless there are other questions from the court. Thank you.
Please, the court. Good afternoon. My name is Louis Rizzo. I have the pleasure of representing William and Kathy Costello, plaintiffs below, appellees in this matter. For the first time in this case on appeal, Volkswagen has taken the position that they are a landlord out of possession. That has never been a position adopted by Volkswagen in this case. They are neither a landlord nor out of possession in this case. Volkswagen possessed the building under the terms of a long-term lease with a company called Diamond State Port Corporation. Diamond State Port Corporation, who's never been a party to this action, would fit within that classification of a non-possessory landlord. They weren't there, had no contact or presence within the VPC, the building that's at issue here.
How do you square that they've raised this issue for the first time with their motion for summary judgment in Superior Court?
The concept of their presence as a landlord was never raised. Their motion for summary judgment, which we've included in our appendix, approaches this case from the point of view of a owner or general contractor's duty to an independent contractor. And their motion for summary judgment was on one basis, on one basis alone, active control over manner and method of work. We responded to that motion by contesting manner and method of work concept, but also contesting the possessory control issue, and in particular in the independent contract setting, the concept of work area control.
Well, if they hadn't put the possessory control issue until appeal, why were you contesting it at trial?
They contested that they did not have the obligation to perform any maintenance at the facility. They contested that at summary judgment and at trial. And what they argued to the court and to the jury was that this was a maintenance issue, not a problem with the building itself. As they point out in page 7 of their brief, they contend here, as before the trial court, that the floor was fit for its customary and intended use. The jury disagreed, and they disagreed based on the testimony of the expert witness, who testified that the flooring material was Volkswagen installed in the building which Volkswagen possessed pursuant to the long-term lease, was inappropriately designed and installed when taken into account the knowledge that Volkswagen had regarding the nature of the operations that would take place.
Can you point me to the jury instruction that says you, the jury, should determine whether this floor constitutes a hazardous condition that makes it unfit for its intended use?
There's no specific instruction with that precise wording.
Obviously.
But the jury instructions with respect to hazardous conditions, noting, detecting, and correcting hazardous conditions, do appear beginning at portions of the jury instructions begin to appear at page 853 of the appendix.
By answering the question the way you did, are you telling us that that is where we would find the instruction that properly crafted the duty that Volkswagen owed to your client?
Yes. The instructions appear, there's four transcript pages that appear at the appendix 853, and the instructions cover the four pages. They're numbered transcript page numbers 121 through 124. And in essence, those instructions follow the evidence that was presented, and I would take the position that those instructions were agreed upon instructions Unfortunately, we obviously have a disagreement about that. I'm the only one. Trial counsel is not here today. So I can't comment on what happened off the record, but it was raised in prior, and so I respond.
Well, we do know there was an exception taken to the instruction, no matter how inarticulate it may have been.
And I'll accept the court's ruling on that. We raised that. It was expressed as a concern. It was discussed. They were reminded of this off-the-record discussion at the prayer conference, and it seemed to have been resolved to the party's satisfaction. The court deems that to be an exception. I'll accept that.
Is it your position that the instruction to which you just pointed us is consistent with the court's summary judgment rulings?
It is. Your Honor, the court's ruling and summary judgment admittedly has contradictory. As counsel pointed out, there's contradictory statements, and the court apologizes at the outset if there was some, I think, ineloquence was the term the court used from ruling from the bench. But what is consistent is the analysis. What is consistent is the case law that cited the Rabar and Bryant cases. The only common thread between Rabar and Bryant, the cases that this court, the trial court, cited in denying summary judgment, is the notion of work area control. Work area control is essentially a recitation of the possessory control concept, but takes possessory control generally deals with landlord-tenant situations. Work area control we typically see in the owner general contractor subcontractor setting.
Let me interrupt you. Are you saying that the trial court did not grant summary judgment to Volkswagen on the issue of possessory control?
I think that probably the most precise language is that it did not grant it as to work area control. And work area control, to the extent it's a different concept than possessory control, I suppose the answer is no. But to the extent it's the same concept, and when really if you look at the concept of work area control, it's really no different. It takes us back to common law premises liability, and it's the same concept as possessory control. And the concept there is control begets a duty. In other words, in this case, Volkswagen had the sole and exclusive ability to make changes to the facility. Mr. Durr, the general manager for Transworld, testified most succinctly on this point. He said, if it involves the people, it's Transworld's responsibility. If it involves the building, it's Volkswagen's responsibility. Mr. Valentovich from Volkswagen, the board general manager, testified they are responsible for renovations to the building, like things like the roof, the floor, and so on. That's not a maintenance issue, day-to-day maintenance, for which Transworld is responsible. Those are responsibilities specifically retained by Volkswagen, not only in practice, but in the license agreement between Volkswagen and Transworld. Moreover,
do the facts support a conclusion that Volkswagen installed a floor that could not be maintained given the conditions under which it was used in a way that was safe and consistent with your expert's testimony?
The facts support no other conclusion. That was uncontested. Plaintiff's expert testified to that very point. And although he was cross-examined with the question, well, if it's dry, if it's maintained dry, doesn't it meet the standard? And he said, yes, but it was a qualified yes. And he goes on to point out that given the nature of these operations, it cannot be. It's a practical impossibility to maintain in a dry fashion. The court has to picture this facility almost like an airplane hangar with large bay doors on either side and literally hundreds of vehicles coming in and out constantly on an assembly line-like fashion. It's an impossibility to keep it dry, regardless of the endeavors of to maintain that. And this is not a new or novel concept. In fact, the notion that commercial industrial settings produce situations where a flooring surface can't be kept dry and clean as a result of the normal byproduct of the operations is something that is common and is addressed both in the BOCA code and in the OSHA code. And those are long-standing provisions that recognize where those situations occur. You need to address those situations in other ways because no amount of maintenance is going to keep them dry given the operations. Moisture is going to be introduced onto that floor.
Let me stop you for a second. Would this be a fair recapitulation of what the trial was all about? One side saying that if the property had been maintained well, this, your clients wouldn't have been injured, period. And the other side saying this wasn't a maintenance issue, this was an issue about a floor that was a hazardous floor and should never have been put in this building. I mean, was that the where the two sides came at each other?
Absolutely.
So, and then the jury was told, in deciding who, if anybody, is responsible, you can take into account whether a particular danger was expected to be prevented or whether it can be prevented and so forth.
That's right, and whether the harm was foreseeable. And that's what the jury was asked to decide and did decide. The court, took pains, and it's made clear there are several colloquies in the record that appear in the appendix where we confirmed for the court that we never contended that there was a maintenance issue and that Volkswagen was responsible for maintenance. Quite the opposite. We contended that this wasn't a maintenance issue, as Your Honor pointed out, but that no amount of maintenance could have maintained this floor in a safe condition. That is why Volkswagen paid to have non-skid flooring installed in some parts of the facility. Interestingly enough, a path to the area where the Volkswagen employees, who also worked inside that facility every day, Volkswagen employees, a pathway of non-skid walkway was installed at Volkswagen's expense to lead to their offices. No walkway was installed to the work area for my client and some of his co-workers. Instead, the flooring was left as it was originally installed by Volkswagen in those areas, and hence we had this incident. And so, Your Honor's kind of nutshell of the argument is correct. There were other defenses raised that my client actually fell outside the building, not inside, that he was injured at home and not in the in the facility. But in terms of the primary issue, Your Honor summarizes it correctly. And so, the notion of which Justice Ridgely pointed out earlier in a question, the difference between a license and a lease is an important one when we're addressing the issue of control. And the concept of control stems from the ability to not only possess, but in this case, make changes to the facility. A license, we know, does not grant any type of property interest. There's no property interest conveyed. There's no leasehold or other type of property interest conveyed. And so, if we think about in practical terms, why would a licensee make changes to a building that they don't own and have no interest in? This license could be terminated at will. Why would they spend whatever money it might take to make changes to a building they don't own, don't have a leasehold interest in? The answer is they have no incentive to do that. Indeed, Volkswagen is the constant presence at this facility. Volkswagen was in control of the structure, was in control of any alterations or improvements. Volkswagen dictated all of that, and Transworld dictated none of that. Control begets duty.
So is it your position that a licensor has this all the same duties as any business owner, landlord?
If the licensor retains control over the property and the condition at issue, which in this case it did. And we know that from
when the licensor contracts with a licensee to do ordinary maintenance?
There's a separate question of whether then they can, whether they're still liable for that and can simply seek indemnification, or whether that then shifts the duty and relieves them of that duty. Fortunately, the court doesn't have to address that in this case because the parties took pains, and we took pains specifically to make sure that there was no suggestion that Volkswagen had an obligation to maintain the facility in terms of day-to-day maintenance, and there was no contention that there was a maintenance deficiency.
Did the instructions suggest that it had that duty?
The instructions do not suggest a maintenance duty. The instructions suggest recognition and the overall duty to maintain a safe premises in terms of not creating or allowing to exist the hazardous condition.
Well, I'm going to quote from A53 at page 121. business owner, landowner, owes a duty to the public to see that the parts of the premises ordinarily used by customers are kept in a reasonably safe condition. Is that talking about Volkswagen?
Yes. And so, as you can see, that does not impose, there was no instructions about maintenance, but rather the obligation to not to create or allow to exist a dangerous or hazardous condition.
Well, I'm sorry, I'm having difficulty seeing that. If the language was accurately read, as I am confident it was by Justice Ridgely, it says keep it in a safe condition. How is keeping it in a safe condition not entirely consistent with maintaining it?
Well, Your Honor, the this takes us back to the notion of control. And that once this hazardous, remember that this flooring surface was installed during a shutdown period where there were no operations going on by any licensee. It was only Volkswagen there. Once those operations resume and this is identified and recognized as a dangerous condition, which, by the way, the Volkswagen port manager and employees testified they became aware of. In other words, people were slipping and going down. Then they have the obligation to, now that these operations have resumed, the water is being introduced into the facility as part of these day-to-day operations, they now have the obligation to correct that, to keep it in a safe condition. Where it may have been safe, dry, when the operations weren't going on, once these operations resume and this moisture becomes introduced and they're aware of that condition, as they can see they were, then they have that obligation, that duty.
Let's assume just for a moment that Volkswagen was an owner out of possession and therefore arguably consistent with the way the trial judge ruled, was not a possessor in control of the area where the slip and fall occurred. What is the source of the duty that Volkswagen would then owe that would allow liability to attach in this particular case?
The source is the license and the specifications it provides regarding control of the physical property.
And I'm talking about the legal duty. Is there something in our restatement that sets forth the duty of a landlord not in possession and therefore without possessory control?
Yes.
In terms of the creation of a hazardous condition?
Yes, and that also goes back to the concept of control.
Well, what is that restatement?
The plaintiffs cite to the Kondravi case. The Kondravi case dealt with a similar but not identical set of facts. In Kondravi, it was an out-of-possession landlord, similar to the...
Will I find a reference to the restatement in that case?
I think that case does discuss the restatement section, and I'm not certain of the precise restatement.
You understand your opponent says where the trial judge got it wrong here was after ruling about the status of their client, that she then misapplied the law of Delaware by getting the restatement reference wrong. She got the wrong source of the duty and mixed and matched the status of Volkswagen and the duty owed under the restatement. Why is their position wrong?
Because for two reasons. First of all, they did appeal the trial court's decision on summary judgment, and that is subject to de novo review. That is part of the amended notice of appeal that was filed in this case. And so that is part of the...
Well, they didn't appeal it on the issue in which they won, I assume.
Well, they appealed the denial of summary judgment.
On the one issue of the three.
Well, that's, and I suppose that's the question, is can there be an appeal of a summary judgment denial on precise issues? Or is it appeal, which is de novo, with a de novo review that is appeal of the denial itself?
Well, it would be extraordinary, at least in my experience, for someone to appeal a judgment that they obtained successfully. It would be extraordinary.
Well, I understand that, Your Honor, but there was not more. My point is that there was one decision on summary judgment, and...
Yeah, well, that... Well,
one order on summary
get, judgment. Get to the, your real point.
Well, I see that I'm out of time.
You can answer my question.
I'm happy to answer the court's question. We state in our, we refer in our brief to the restatement section 358.
Okay.
Section 358.
That's all I need. Thank you very much. I just wanted to know the reference on which you relied from the restatement. Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor. Justice Steele, just following up on that, I think counsel just misspoke. Counsel, in their brief, referred to Section 360 of the restatement. Section 360 clearly talks about a landlord that is in possession of the premises, has some common areas that the tenant is allowed to use. The tenant has its own separate space, and the tenant falls in a common area. 360 would cause the landlord to be responsible for that fall. The section that should have been applied is Section 358. It was not applied. It's not cited in the Kadabi case. There's no section cited in the Kadabi case. But Justice Berger asked what jury instruction instructed as to requiring a finding as to the hazardous condition of the floor. There was none. If you're going to submit this on the hazardous condition issue, it is plain error not to give such an instruction. The appropriate instruction would be under Section 358. The evidence below clearly indicates that this plaintiff cannot be successful on 358 because it has to establish that the subparts of 358. Those subparts are that the lessee did not know or had reason to know of the condition. The lessee here obviously did know of the condition. That is, be put down mats and put down anti-skid paint. There's only one reason for that, because they knew it was slippery.
Is there a restatement section that deals with licensors and licensees?
Not to my knowledge, Your Honor. But, you know, again...
Does the commentary make clear that this is intended to apply to both landlords, lessors and lessees, as well as licensors and licensees?
Well, I think the commentary makes clear, Your Honor, that this is to be applied to a situation where a lessor leases a property with a dangerous condition. So if you assume that while this plant is shut down, Volkswagen comes in and replaces this floor and then sends it back to the licensee with this floor as it is. Now, if you want to call it a defective floor, we disagree. But even if you call it a defective floor, there has to be a proper jury instruction. There's no such instruction. And as you pointed out, Justice Ridgely, the instructions that were given are reflected on page 853, and they are as if the Volkswagen was, you know, in possession and exercising control over this premises. You know, the plaintiff's argument as to control...
Could you submit an alternative set of instructions to the court?
We objected to the instructions that were given. We did not submit all the instructions that were submitted, I think, are in the record before you. We did not submit a separate instruction because this was an exception to the general law that had never been discussed or ruled upon. The trial court, without any ability for us to stop it, just said, you know, this is what I'm going to charge on, and used 15.1.
No ability to stop it. Did you propose specific language to the trial judge that you
proposed,
make up record?
We proposed simple negligence language because we had no other choice at that point, Your Honor. We thought we had won.
But you have a choice to make a record, don't you?
The record was made inartfully. I concede that. But we thought we had won on active control and possessory control. All right? There was no more control. The plaintiff's answers to your questions here today on control, active control, work area control, it's all gibberish. I mean, Raybar addresses work area control. They've got no evidence of work area control at this specific site. None whatsoever. This is the first time we've heard of work area control. They conceded that we won summary judgment as to possessory control in the lower court. And when it came time to instruct the jury, we thought the court should have ruled in our favor on our motion for directed verdict. It refused, but not only did it refuse, it didn't even hear the argument. It kept putting it off and putting it off and putting it off and wouldn't even let us make our record and state our position. So this court had no idea what our position was until after the jury verdict had been rendered. The record is replete with trial court error. And when you go back to Justice Berger's question, what was charged? Nothing was charged on hazardous condition. You can't send this to the jury on what we say is an exception to the general law never previously recognized without giving some instruction, and that's what was done.
And you did not submit one on hazardous condition.
No, Your Honor, because we didn't know, we did not know that that's what this court was going to do.
Right. Thank you, Mr. Phillips. Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
Take the case under advisement.
Thank you.
Rise.
person coming in for the Supreme Court of the State of Delaware may now depart and give their attendance to the call of the court. The court is now adjourned. God save the state and the honorable court.